the power of his words. He looked at Daryl.
We don't always see things the same way, but you have always put the pack first and foremost. I have fought Guayota, and I tell you that without Tad's help, he would have defeated me. Ariana can make us invulnerable to his heat, but you saw the video. I don't know that he can be killed, or if he can, how it might be done. I have spoken to Bran, and if we fail here tonight, then he will send Charles. But Guayota invaded my territory. This is my fight. You should also know that Ariana told me what she could and could not do, and I've had time to think. Daryl, I need you to protect the pack if this fight doesn't go well.
He looked around at the whole room, and we were all silent, even Lucia, Jesse, and Christy, who were not pack, even Daryl, who wanted to protest. We were silent because he wanted us to be so, and he was the alpha. His eyes lingered on mine, and if there was grief in them, I think it was only our mating bond that let me see it. He didn't think he was going to survive this, or he'd have taken Daryl with him.
I will take the walker Gary Laughing Dog, who brings a prophecy that he must come,
Adam said into the silence.
Then myself. The rest of you are volunteers. Feel free to say no, because the estimate that Ariana gave me was 6 wolves. If you would rather not die tonight, or rather wait until another night, there is no shame. Warren?
Warren drawled his
yes, boss, without hesitation.
The wolf stirred and began to howl. Emerging from human throats, it was not as pure or carrying as it would have been out of the wolves, but the emotion was the same. There was respect and a celebration of his bravery in accepting and in the honor of being chosen to fight beside his alpha. It took Warren entirely by surprise. He grabbed Kyle's hand and held on as his eyes brightened with tears that threatened to spill over. Warren had spent most of his very long life alone, when wolves are meant to live in packs. I'd first met him while he worked at a gas station near here. I'd introduced him to Adam, who I resented at the time but couldn't help but respect. As Gary had said, Adam was what an alpha should be, and I'd known it. Adam had welcomed Warren into the pack, but the pack had taken him in with mixed feelings. Their support told him that there were no mixed feelings left. Not at this moment. When the howl faded, Adam said,
Honey?
There was another stir in the pack. This time it was more shock than approval. Women didn't fight, not in traditional packs. Honey was now unmated, which should have left her rank at the lowest of the pack, even below Zack, our new submissive. But Honey wasn't a submissive wolf, not even close. Honey didn't need their approval. She raised her chin, looked at me, because Adam's call had as much to do with me as it did with the pack. She'd resented it when I had refused to leave the traditional relegation of women alone. She liked that being married to Peter meant she was low-ranking. She gave first me, then Warren, for whom she'd always had a soft spot, a savage smile. Yes, boss, she said. Me. I thought hard at Adam, and I knew he heard me. Pick me. If everyone who goes is going to die anyway, why not pick me?
I need you to survive,
he answered me without speaking, without looking at me.
I need to know you survive.
I need you to survive too, I thought, but I tried not to send it to him. There was a faint chance he'd listen. And what if one werewolf instead of a coyote made a difference? What if I was the reason he died? So I kept silent. I'm sorry, said Christy suddenly before Adam could name anyone else. Adam gave her a tender look that she didn't deserve. God help us and keep us from receiving what we deserve. It was a favorite saying of my foster father, Brian.
It's not your fault, Christy,
Adam said.
It is just a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
She got up from the couch where she was sitting next to Aurelie. No. Not that, Adam. I'm sorry that I wasn't strong enough to live your life. I left you. You would never have left me. She looked at me and looked away. The tears on her face weren't crocodile tears. They were the real, unattractive thing complete with runny nose. She still was beautiful. I'm glad I left for your sake. You found someone who can stand beside you. I couldn't live with what you are, but that's my problem, not yours.
She looked down, then straight into his eyes.
I love you.
If she hadn't done that last part, I would have kissed her, figuratively speaking, and cried friends. There are some things that honest, honorable people don't do to the people they love. They don't propose marriage on TV. They don't bring home small, cuddly animals without checking with their spouses first. And they don't tell their ex-husband they love him in front of a crowd that includes their daughter and his current wife right before he goes off to almost certain death. It didn't help that most of us could tell that she wasn't lying. Adam said, "Thank you," as if she'd given him a great gift. But he didn't tell her what exactly he was thanking her for. She caught the ambiguity. She gave him a rueful smile and sat down. Aurelie hugged her fiercely. I pulled my legs up and wrapped my arms around them. Maybe they won't die, I thought. Maybe something Gary does keeps them from dying. All this time, since the first time he kissed me, I'd been worried about growing old, about leaving Adam alone. And it turned out that it was going to be the other way around.
Paul, Adam said.
Paul's name wasn't a surprise, not like Honey's. Paul nodded, looked at Warren, shook his head, and said,
"Yes, boss," with graveyard humor.
Paul had tried to kill Warren once because Warren was the wolf just above him in rank, and because Warren was gay. Now he was going out to a battle that Adam didn't think they would come back from, and he, like Honey, was telling Warren that he had his back. People can change.
George?
Yes, boss, said the quiet policeman.
Maybe I should have kept the walking stick. It had worked against a vampire, against the river devil. Surely the river devil had been as powerful, more powerful with its ability to remake the world, and it had been the walking stick that had brought it down.
Mary Jo? He asked.
Fighting fires is what I do, she told him. Yes, boss.
Mary Jo loved my mate, too. She'd protect him if she could. I was glad that she was going. My grief was so huge that I had no room for jealousy. The walking stick was made of wood and silver, and no matter how magical it was wood. I had no doubt that someone could throw it into a campfire and it would emerge unscathed, but a campfire was not a volcano. If the walking stick could do some great magic that would kill a fire elemental like Guayota, Coyote would have told me. I was pretty sure Coyote would have told me.
Alec?
I didn't know Alec as well as I did some of the other wolves. He was a friend of Paul's, and Paul didn't like me much. Maybe Coyote would have told me if the walking stick could kill Guayota. He told me that mortal means could not harm the Tibisenas when in their Tibisena form. Did he mean that the walking stick might?
Yes, boss.
I was pretty sure that the walking stick had served Coyote's purpose by showing me what lay within the Tibisenas. If it would have been effective against them, he'd have told me, or couched it in some kind of riddle that I'd still be puzzling out when one of the Tibisenas killed me.
That's enough, said Adam. If Ariana has more magic when she has dealt with us, then I will call for more volunteers.
Because of her fear of the wolves, Ariana worked with them one at a time in the kitchen. I thought Samuel was going to go with her, but he came and sat next to me instead.
We don't have any idea on how to kill this thing, Samuel said. Ariana tells me that as far as she knows, the only way to kill a primitive elemental like Guayota would be to destroy his volcano, and even then, he would not die for centuries.
El Teide is the third highest volcano in the world, I told him, pressing my cheekbone into my knees. The burn reminded me that turning to my other cheek would have been smarter. I think it's a little beyond our capabilities. Killing the Tibisenas, his two giant dogs, might do it. But you can only kill their mortal forms when they look like mostly normal dogs instead of polar bear-sized monsters. I suspect they are not going to be fighting werewolves in their mortal forms.
Ariana would come with us, he told me, but she doesn't have the power she once had, not even a tenth of it. And fire dogs are too close to her nightmares. There is no guarantee that she wouldn't do as much damage to us as she would to Guayota and his beasts.
I'd come with you, I said,
But Adam doesn't want me to die, and for some reason he seems to think that's his decision to make.
Samuel hugged me.
Don't mourn us until we're dead, he said.
I'll spit on your graves, I told him, and he laughed, the bastard.
Nice, said Adam, crouching in front of me. I had to watch you go up against the river, devil.
That sucked too, I told him without looking up from my knees, but we had a plan that we thought might work.
Based on a story, he said roughly. It wasn't a plan. It was a suicide mission.
I looked up and met his eyes. I didn't say, so is this. He knew it. It was in his eyes.
Honey has made her suite available to us, he said. Will you come?
I unlocked my fingers from around my legs and rose out of Samuel's embrace and went into Adam's. Yes, please, I whispered. No one in the room spoke, but they watched us leave, knowing where we were going, and I didn't care. Honey's suite was a bedroom, office, and bathroom, all done in shades of cool gray. It surprised me, until I remembered that this had been Peter's room, too. The gray suited the man he'd been. We didn't speak. All of the words had already been said. When he stripped my clothes off me, I noticed that Honey kept her house a little cooler than ours, because I was cold, or maybe that was just fear. Naked, I took off Adam's clothes and folded them as I set them down, as if taking care with his clothing might show him how much I longed to take care of him. Unusually, his body was slow to awaken, and so was mine. But that was okay, because this was about saying goodbye, about impregnating my skin with his scent, so that I would have him with me after he was gone, about remembering exactly what the soft skin just to the side of his hip bone felt like under my fingertips and under my lips. It was about love and loss, and the unbearable knowledge that this could be the last time, was probably the last time. I could feel Ariana's magic on him, and I hoped that it would be enough to keep him safe. He lay on his back on Honey's bed and pulled me on top of him as he'd done the first time we'd made love. He let me touch him until his body was shuddering and sweat rose on his forehead. He pulled my face up to his and kissed me tenderly, despite the speed of his pulse.
My turn, he whispered.
I nodded, and he rolled me beneath him and returned the favor, seeking out his favorite places and the ones where I was most sensitive. He brought me to climax, then lay with his head on my stomach, his arms around me, catching his breath before he started to build the pace again. We ended as we'd begun, with me on him, watching his face as I moved on him and he in me. The expressions he wore told me to speed up or slow down, until his bright yellow eyes opened wide, and he grabbed my hips and helped me take us both where we were going. I lay down on him and put my face in his neck. And if I cried, I didn't show him my tears. He ran his hands up and down my back until I could pretend I hadn't been crying. I suck at this, I told him. I suck at words when they count. He smiled at me.
I know.
I understand, I told him. I understand why you have to go and why I have to stay. I think that you are doing the right thing, the only thing you can do. I wish... My stomach hurt. And it would have been kindness to put me out of my misery, but I wasn't going to share that with Adam.
I know,
he said. You weren't supposed to get that, I told him.
I know that, too, he said, his voice tender. You should know that you can't hide things from me.
Good, I said, my voice fierce. Good. Then you know I love you. We showered the sweat off our bodies in Honey's shower, wordless. His hands were warm, and he was patient with my need to touch and touch. I wished futilely that this time would last forever, but eventually he turned off the water and we dressed. Willis asked you to call the police if you figured out where Juan Flores was, I said, jerking a comb through my hair. Adam took the comb away and took over the job. His touch was gentle and slow, as if there were all the time in the world to do the job properly. As if untangled hair mattered.
He did, Adam said. And I saw enough cannon fodder in Nam to last me a lifetime.
He saw my flinch and paused in his combing to kiss me. Neither of us talked again until he set the comb aside.
I love you,
I told him rawly,
and if you don't come back, I will spit on your grave.
He smiled, but not enough to bring on his dimple.
I know you do, and I know you will. Mercedes Athena Thompson Hauptmann, if I have not said it, you should know that you brought joy into my life when I thought there was no joy left in the world.
Don't, I said, tears spilling over as I frantically scrubbed them away. Don't say things like that when I'm going to have to go out there and face all of them. Don't you make me cry
again. He smiled, this time with dimple, and mopped my face with the shirt he hadn't put on yet.
You're tough. You'll deal, he said. And at least I didn't leave you a letter.
13. They left at dusk. Ariana had only managed to magic the wolves through Mary Jo, so Alec was with those of us who waved them out. When they were gone, most of the pack dispersed to their own houses. Lucia busied herself cleaning up the havoc that the pack had made of Honey's house, and Christy and Jesse helped her. I understood the need to do something.
Mercy.
It was Ariana, but it was something more, too, so I was careful to move slowly when I turned around.
I have to go, she said. I wish, but I cannot stay with my magic depleted and so many wolves about.
I wrapped my arms around myself. I understand. Thank you, Ariana. You gave them a chance. She looked down.
I hope so,
she said in a low voice.
I hope so.
I didn't know what to say to her fear, not with mine so wild in my heart. So I watched her get into Samuel's car and drive off, and tried not to remember that I knew the address. I went back into the house through the back door. Christy was cooking with Lucia and Aurieli. They looked like they were making enough food for an army, even though everyone was gone. Where's Jessie? I asked.
Upstairs with Daryl, Christy said. She doesn't want to talk to me, but maybe you'll have better luck.
Christy looked tired and worried. Her eyes were red. I hoped mine weren't.
If I had stayed here where I was needed, everyone would be safe now.
I wiped my hands over my face to cover whatever expression might have crossed it. She wasn't trying to shut me out. She was trying to save Adam and the rest. If I had married a doctor, like my mother told me to, then I wouldn't have Joel to grieve over, Lucia said unexpectedly. She was good at being quiet and unobtrusive. And that would be a waste. If you had stayed here, this might not have happened, but maybe you'd have gotten in a car wreck and died. She shrugged. It does no good to play with what-ifs.
Well said, Aurieli told her. Play the hand you have, my papa liked to say.
I left them to their conversation and trotted up the stairs where I could hear a movie running quietly. Daryl sat on one side of the couch nearest to the TV, and Jesse on the other. I sat down in the middle. So, I said to Daryl, do you think Korra is going to be as good an avatar as Aang?
Who's Aang?
He asked. You started him with Korra? I accused Jesse. That's not okay. It's like reading the last chapter of the book first.
Honey doesn't have the Last Airbender series, Jesse said in a low voice. It was Korra or bust.
I think I should check on the cooks, Daryl said.
He left with cowardly haste. I reached over and turned up the volume of the show until I was pretty sure we had privacy.
I like Korra, Jesse told me in a melancholy voice. She's not perfect, but she tries hard.
Like your mom, I said. She nodded.
I love her.
And she loves you back, I said. She nodded.
She does. She's not perfect, but she's my mom, you know.
You've met my mother, I told her, and she laughed. I loved my mom, too, but I was very glad she lived in Portland.
I'm glad I have you and Dad, she said. That way it's okay that Mom is
flaky, selfish, horrible.
Mom,
she concluded. We watched Korra for a while longer. Daryl rejoined us as soon as we turned the volume back down.
I am not wanted in the kitchen, he said. Daryl loved to cook. Christy says that men can't cook.
You're a great cook, Jesse told him.
He smiled at her,
A gentle smile he saved for Arielle and Jesse.
I know. I'm better than any of them, but they won't listen to me.
I think I like Cora better than Aang, I said after we'd watched another 5 minutes. She gets to go do things instead of waiting around for other people.
I hear you, agreed Daryl.
I think I'm gonna go check on Medea, I said. With Lucia's big dog in the house, we'd shut Medea in the tack room out in the stables. The horses in the pasture whinnied at me when I walked by. I threw them a couple of flakes of alfalfa hay, though there was plenty of grass in the pasture. A couple of extra flakes wouldn't hurt them. Medea greeted me with frantic purrs. I sat down on the wooden floor next to her and petted her, trying not to think. There were two western saddles bedecked with silver on wooden saddle racks, and another pair that were more everyday trail saddles. Blue ribbons and big oversized awards plastered one wall. Everything was covered with dust, as if, like the horses, they had not been used since Peter died. Eventually, Daryl came out to talk.
Hey, girl, he said from the doorway.
Hey.
Jesse was summoned his taster in the kitchen, he told me. They should be over at the house by now, in the middle of changing.
Adam's plan had been to find a quiet spot near Guayota's place so that all the wolves could change. Then they would wait until the small hours of the night and take what advantage surprise might offer them. I'd been keeping track of the time, too. I'll let you know if our mating bond tells me anything, I told him, my attention firmly on the way Medea's rabbit-soft coat rippled under my fingers.
We'll all feel it if anyone dies, Daryl told me after a very long moment. Why don't you come into the house? I'll keep Christy in line.
I looked at him and raised my eyebrows. He smiled sheepishly.
Okay, but I expect she'll behave in front of everyone anyway.
It's not Christy, I assured him. I just don't have any comfort for anyone left in me, Daryl. And if someone even looks at me with sympathy... No, I'll wait here for a while more. He hesitated.
I told him I would look after you.
His voice was soft as I'd ever heard it. I wiped my eyes angrily but managed a half laugh. Shut up. Samuel told me not to mourn until I had something to mourn about.
Yeah,
Daryl said softly.
Yeah.
He leaned against the doorframe and kept me company for a few minutes before returning to the house. It would be hours before we knew anything. Anything at all. Tibisenas could be killed temporarily if they caught them in dog form. They were going to try to take them out as early in the fight as they could, and if that didn't destroy Guayota or send him back where he came from, they would then concentrate on Guayota. 7 werewolves and a walker against a god. I curled up around Medea and prayed as fervently as I ever had. I had faith that it would help. But death isn't a tragedy to God, only to those left behind. I finished, and only then realized that Stefan was sitting on a hay bale on the wall on the far side of the stable aisle, where he could look through the tack room door and see me.
I didn't want to interrupt, he said. I told you I'd come talk tonight, but I had some trouble finding you.
He paused.
I talked to Daryl at the house. He told me what's going on. A volcano god, eh? If I'd realized exactly what that address meant, I'm not sure I'd have gotten it for you.
He looked away.
I think the talk I promised you ought to wait until later, I suppose.
I'd forgotten about the talk. Somehow it didn't seem important to fuss about something he could have done nothing about. Any other day I might have gotten self-righteously angry. I'd worked really hard not to freak at the bonds I shared with Adam and the pack. I wasn't sure I had it in me not to freak about a bond with a vampire, even one I liked. But today, I couldn't find the energy to lie to myself and believe that blaming Stefan for the mess would make anything better. It's okay, I told him. It wasn't your fault. I understand why you didn't tell me that the bond was still real. I agreed to it in the first place, and I do it again, even knowing the consequences. Lies aren't always destructive, are they? Sometimes a few lies hurt no one. You have nothing to apologize for, and I have nothing to be mad about.
He patted the hay bale beside him. I picked up Medea, got to my feet, and stepped down into the stable aisle. He smelled like popcorn, and it was subtly reassuring. I sat down next to him, and Medea deserted my lap for his. His fingers found the favored spot under her ear, and she closed her eyes and purred. I leaned against his shoulder, and he waited with me. The barn was dark. The only light came from the bare bulb in the tack room. It smelled of leather, hay, and horses. I could hear the two horses eating outside, and Medea's purring. An owl hooted from somewhere nearby. In the distance, very far distance, I could hear a car's engine. Someone coming home from a Saturday shopping expedition or an early movie. I closed my eyes. Stefan's arm tightened and loosened under my temple as he petted Medea. I couldn't hear his heartbeat or listen to him breathe. Usually, when he forgot to make himself human-like, the oddness made me uncomfortable. But tonight, it was peaceful. I only wanted one heartbeat in my ear. Adam's. The horses took off running, their hooves a rapid thunder in the night. I pulled my head off Stefan's shoulder to see if I could hear what spooked them.
"The wind changed, and they smelled me," Stefan said. "That's all. They'll be back in a few minutes, because they aren't really scared."
He leaned his head back against the wall.
"I remember, when all I wanted was to ride a horse. We had four at my home when I was growing up. Two were plow horses. One was a pony my mother used to go to market. The fourth was a riding horse that just showed up one day, wearing the remains of a saddle. One of his knees was enlarged, and it was sore for months afterward. It never really went down, but it didn't seem to bother him much after he rested up. We kept waiting for someone to come acclaim him, but no one ever did. I learned to ride on him."
The car was getting closer, though still probably a couple of miles out. Something about it made me nervous. I stood up. It sounded like the car Juan Flores had been driving when he broke into my garage. "Stefan," I said, "how many people can you do your instant transport with if we're only talking a couple of miles?"
"Four, and maybe five if I don't need to be conscious after the last one. You need me to take you somewhere?"
"Not me," I said. "There are only three other houses on this road, and the rest of the land is farming. I've heard a Toyota V6, two different Chevy trucks, a Ford truck, and a Mercedes while I've been here. There is a Chevy Malibu approaching us right now, and Guayota drove a Malibu when he attacked me at my garage."
"You think Guayota is coming here?"
Stefan said. "Yes, I do." If Stefan could get Jesse, Lucia, and Christy away from here, they might make it out alive. I didn't think I could convince Daryl to go, or Arielle. I put Medea down. If the worst happened, I didn't want her trapped in the stable. I grabbed a pitchfork that was leaning against the wall and set off for Adam's SUV at a brisk walk, my ear tuned to the still distant car. "Would you take four people from here to..."
"Where?"
"My house." The Vanagon was still at the ruins of my garage, but Jesse's car would be there. "Once you get them all there, call Adam's cell phone. You'll probably get a man named Gary. Tell him what happened. Then get everyone into Jesse's car and drive." I opened the passenger side of the SUV and retrieved the S&W-29 and a box of ammunition from under the front seat. The car was still coming, so I headed for the house at a sprint. Stefan stayed beside me.
"I could take you out of here."
"You do, and I will never forgive you." I opened the back door, but didn't go in. "I'm second in the pack, Stefan. That means I don't desert anyone. If you can get the humans out of here, I will owe you for the rest of my life. Take Arielle if you can." He looked down at me, then did the strangest thing. He kissed me. A quick butterfly kiss that gave me no chance to react.
"I'll do my best to keep your lambs safe, Mercy. If I can get them all to safety, I'll return."
"No," I said. "Vampires and fire don't mix. Don't throw yourself away, Stefan. Let Adam know that Guayota is coming here. Ariana magicked him and some of the wolves so they can survive fire.
They'll come as soon as they can.
The pitchfork was a weapon of last resort, and I set it under some bushes where hopefully I could grab it in a hurry and the bad guys wouldn't notice it. I'd left Daryl and Christy arguing with Aurieli, but Jesse and Lucia had already been taken to safety. I wasn't out front long when Daryl came out the door, turning off the porch and yard lights as he did so. He strolled out to me and listened to the car. The driver had been driving back and forth a bit. Country roads can be tricky when all you have is a direct line to your target. Was Guayota tracking Christy somehow?
How sure are you about this being Guayota?
Daryl asked. I shook my head. Could be a lost tourist. Could be a couple of kids out exploring. Could be a neighbor who bought a new car. Did you talk Aurieli into going?
No,
said Daryl.
That took Christy.
He started stripping off his clothes and began his change at the same time. I could tell by the sparkly feeling in the werewolf magic that followed all the wolves around. Tonight it felt especially obvious, as though all my senses were on high alert.
Never thought I'd be grateful that Christy can lead people around by their noses before. Your tame vampire took Christy and promised to be back for Aurieli. I am very grateful that all vampires can't jump places like that. They'd rule the world, no doubt.
Daryl dropped his shirt to the ground and started shedding wristwatch and rings.
If this is Guayota, we don't have a chance.
I know. All day I'd had this feeling of impending doom. Usually I'm the optimist in the party, but today was different.
It's going to take me about 12 minutes to change, even pushing it, and whoever that is, they'll be here in 2. I called Adam's phone, but no one picked up. Likely right about now they are all in the middle of changing and no one will be able to listen to the message. Stefan said to tell you that he'd keep calling until he got hold of someone. He said that if he had the juice left, he'd come back and help. But from the looks of him when he vanished with Christy, I think it'll be a while. If that car is Guayota, it will be too late for the two of us. I watched that fight in the garage, and Adam says you'd both have been toast if it weren't for Tad.
Yes, I said. It's too bad Tad is locked up in Fairyland.
We could run,
Daryl said. No, I told him. The Tibisanas are faster than we are. Gary and I ran from them, and if Coyote hadn't pulled one last trick, they'd have caught us. This is pack territory, I tapped my foot on the ground. That helps in a fight. Not much, but we were going to need everything we had.
I'm going to the barn to finish changing. It will be safer if I have a few seconds to orient myself. My wolf is aggressive when I first change.
He kicked off his shoes and dropped his slacks.
I'll come help as soon as I can.
If, I said, if there is no use, you run, okay? Daryl shook his head, his eyes bright gold in the moonlight. His teeth were sharper than they'd been a second ago.
My wolf won't leave you, Mercy.
He left, a dark shadow among darker shadows, almost invisible to my eyes. But I heard his rapid footfalls as he ran for the barn. I saw the headlights of the oncoming car for just a moment before the engine cut out, and a moment later, the headlights went dark. Night is seldom really silent. The light wind rustled the branches of the trees in the yard and the grass in the nearby fields. Spring frogs croaked, and the night hunters added their calls. But gradually, the other sounds died, and left only the wind. The odds that the car was Guayota's skyrocketed into the certainty zone. Our best chance was for me to kill the Tibisanas, one of whom was my friend, and then to hold Guayota off in the hope that somehow someone was able to reach Adam. Gary could answer the phone. Maybe that was why he'd had to go with them. Maybe Guayota would finish off Daryl and me, then head back to his home, where he'd find Adam and the others waiting for him. Probably he'd track down Christy, if that's what he was doing. It must not be a perfect method of finding her, because she was gone and he was still coming. Maybe Guayota would manage to kill us all. It felt like that kind of night. From the house, I heard Cookie bark an alert. She was answered by 2 hunting howls, high-pitched and hungry, one on either side of me. Judging by what I had learned while Gary and I had been chased by the pair of Tibisanas, they were maybe 100 yards apart.
The sound they made wasn't the same one that had made my blood freeze when Coyote had taken Gary and me out. Maybe that meant they were still in a vulnerable form, something I could kill. A darker shadow moved where there hadn't been a shadow before, and Juan Flores, who was Guayota, stepped out where I could see him. I didn't bother aiming my gun at him, though I remembered that he'd staggered back when I'd shot him before. He stopped at the edge of the lawn.
"Where is she?" he asked. "Where have you put her?"
He looked so human. But so did I supposed. "She's gone," I told him. "We sent her away when we heard your car."
"I don't understand you," he said, a faint frown between his eyebrows.
"I know," I told him. For a moment, I wasn't scared, just sad. He was so lost. "She's not who you think she is."
"Yes," he said,
and for a moment the sadness in his voice echoed mine.
"Yes, she is. Do you think that I would not recognize the face of my beloved? I looked across the room, and there she was. She knew it, too. I come to you this night, made strong from hot new blood, but I need her to feel complete. Without her by my side, I am always hungry."
More bodies somewhere, Tony, I thought.
"We are ready to renew the hunt, and she cannot be hidden from me," continued Flores in this creepy, reasonable voice I remembered from before. "But she might be hurt if we are forced to continue to hunt her. That is the nature of a hunt. I don't want to hurt her. If you tell me where she is, I won't hurt her."
He was sincere. He didn't want to hurt her. I thought of Kyle's story and wondered if perhaps he had not meant to hurt the goddess he'd kidnapped and raped. Intention and results are often different. "No," I said. As soon as I refused, Flores's eyes flared red, and his face, though still human-featured, lost any resemblance to a real human expression.
"Take her," he said.
Something dark and hot moved in the darkness, and I raised the gun and fired at the Tibisena charging from my right as rapidly as I could, though even with my night vision, all I could see were its red eyes, as if it somehow drew the darkness around itself like a cloak. This was not the dog that I'd killed in my garage. This was the bigger, faster version I'd seen the possibility of when Coyote had taken me to visit Guayota's house. As Coyote had promised, the bullets, and I knew from the bright spots that appeared and vanished on the Tibisena's body that I was hitting it, didn't even slow it down. When I felt its too hot breath, I dropped the gun and dove for my pitchfork. And then we danced. I could not trust my sight to tell me where it was, but the coyote knew, and I let her guide my steps. The pitchfork was a better weapon against the Tibisena than the mop, crowbar, or wrench had been against Guayota. The long wooden handle didn't heat up, and the metal ends didn't burn as long as I didn't leave them on the Tibisena too long, because it had quickly become apparent that the Tibisena, like Guayota, was a creature of fire, of the volcano where it had been birthed. As a test, I hit the beast hard, sinking the tines in a few inches, then jerking them out. The wounds glowed red, and something bubbled out for a moment, but it took 2 seconds, I counted, for the holes to close. I didn't dare hit it any harder, or I'd lose my weapon. The wounds also disturbed whatever it was that kept me from seeing the Tibisena, and I caught a glimpse of it, huge and hairy. Guayota was turning in a slow circle, ignoring my fight with his Tibisena as he searched for something. Christy. I danced faster. For a few minutes, we were at a stalemate, the Tibisena and I. I couldn't hurt it, but I was moving too fast for it to hit me. As long as I could keep the speed up and my coyote could sense its attacks, I was okay. A few minutes is a long time in a fight, and all I had to do was hold out long enough for Daryl to come. But there were 2 Tibisenas. I caught a glimpse of the second one, when it slapped me on the head with its paw. I stood on cracked blacktop in a schoolyard. There was a swing set in front of me, and Coyote sat on the only swing, moving it back and forth a few inches by wiggling his bare toes on the ground. It was one of those swings you see in parks and schools, with thick chains attached to a big, flat strip of rubber. The pink scrunchie was gone, his braid bound by a strip of white leather. "I'm dreaming," I said flatly.
"You're dying," corrected Coyote, lifting his head from where he'd been watching his feet to meet my eyes. "Your neck is broken. Do you feel any different?" I always wondered what other people feel when they are dying. For me, it is usually like this.
He let go of the chains and clapped his hands once. And I'm back to normal, except not quite where I was a moment ago. How do I kill Guayota? He shook his head and backed up slowly, letting the swing ride up his back.
You can't. It isn't possible. Besides, you are dying.
It didn't sound like my death bothered him very much. He tilted his head and said,
"Do you know that burn on your cheek looks like war paint?"
"Gary thinks you're just playing with us," I told him. Coyote nodded soberly as he hopped gracefully on the swing and let it carry him forward, then back.
"Gary has reason to, but he doesn't think like you do. He thinks Coyote hates me and has me thrown in jail."
He leaned into the swing and used his legs and back to build momentum.
"You think, what good comes from Gary Laughing Dog in jail with the gift of prophecy he hates so much? Could it be that perhaps, just perhaps, both of Coyote's children have a chance of surviving if they are working together?"
He gave me a sly look.
Not that it wasn't funny to see his face when he realized we'd stolen a police car and he was parked in front of the police station.
I thought about what he'd said. "Why did you show me the Tibisenas?"
"Didn't you want to save your friend, Joel?"
"You answer a lot of questions with questions."
"Do I?"
His smile turned smug, and he leaped out of the swing, landing on his feet, but letting his body fall forward until his hands rested lightly on the ground. He lowered his eyelids, and suddenly there was nothing lighthearted, nothing funny about him, just a primordial fierceness that burned down my spine.
"I guess you aren't dead yet, are you?"
he whispered, and the words wrapped around me as my vision went dark.
"Good thing coyotes are hard to kill."
I opened my eyes and realized I was crumpled on the cool, damp grass, and there was a Tibisena crouched over me, licking the long wound in my arm. I couldn't move. My body knew that moving would hurt, and it just wouldn't respond to my urgent demands that it do so. I could hear fighting, but it was Aurieli's battle cry that let me take my eyes off the Tibisena guarding me. I'd never seen Daryl and Aurieli fight together. And they were beautiful. For the first time in my life, I wished I were a singer like the Maroc and both of his sons were, because only music would do them justice. Aurieli was still in human form, and she held my pitchfork as a weapon. Her clothes were burned, and I imagined, hidden by the night, there were also burns on her skin. She was muscle and grace and speed as she stabbed and pivoted, jumped and dodged around her husband. Daryl's brindle coat made him nearly as hard to track as the Tibisena's magic made them. Most wolves fight with instinct. Some, as I had tonight, fight with instinct and training. But a rare few hold on to enough humanity to use strategy. And that strategy was what made him and Aurieli so impressive. He charged and leaped, she struck and rolled. And somehow neither of them was where they'd been when the Tibisena who wasn't guarding me lunged and tangled herself up with Guayota. If it had only been the Tibisena they fought, I would have had no fear. Guayota, even in his fiery dog form, was not as large as his Tibisena,
but there was no question who was the nastier predator. While the Tibisena, Daryl, and Aurieli fought with everything in them, Guayota played. Daryl bled from a dozen small wounds, and as I watched, Guayota struck him again, and a shallow cut stretched from Daryl's shoulder to his hip. It was a wound from Guayota's claw only, without the heat he could generate, though the wet grass smoked, and he left blackened patches wherever he stood for longer than a breath.
"Are you going to let them die while you watch?"
Impossible to tell if the voice was Coyote's or my own. My muscles would just not move. I struggled like a bodybuilder trying to lift weights that were 100 pounds too heavy, and the effort built up to a growl in my chest and out my throat. The Tibisena quit licking my arm and growled back. I stopped struggling as I met its eyes briefly and saw Howell in them. The Tibisena shook his head, and the long rock-like hairs that roughed his neck rattled together. The connection broken between us, he went back to my arm. He had worked a piece of skin loose and was tearing it away, swallowing it. I had a terrible, wonderful idea. "Howell," I said, and the tongue that had been traveling back to my arm paused, and his eyes met mine again, eyes that were a dark, sullen red that was more like garnets than rubies. "Didn't you want to save your friend Howell?" Coyote had asked me when I asked him why he'd shown me what the Tibisenas were, and I'd seen that the spells that tied Howell to Guayota's immortal child were a lot like pack bonds. I didn't have the walking stick, but I could see the struggle that Howell still fought. Stefan had said something about bonds when he'd been apologizing for not breaking the one between us. He'd implied that a bond taken willingly was stronger than one that was forced. "Answer the questions I ask you, and I can help," I said, my tongue thick in my mouth. I had practiced drawing on my mate's power, and now I drew it around me, finding that I could borrow a little strength. That was useful, but the important part of Adam's power that I preempted was his authority. "You don't have to say your response out loud. Howell Arocha, I see you." Garnet eyes glittered with borrowed light. "Will you join with us, the Columbia Basin Pack, to hunt, to fight, to live and run under the full moon?" There were ritual words, but I'd been taught that the ritual was secondary to intent in all werewolf magic. I thought of Howell, tough, thoughtful, and big-hearted, and welcomed him into my family. I paused, but held his eyes. "I claim you," I told him, feeling the familiar gathering of pack magic until it burned in my throat, until the next words were determined more by the magic than by me. "We claim you, Howell Arocha, son of Texas, son of the Canary Islands, guardian of four-footed cousins. By my flesh and blood, that is the flesh and blood that belongs to the Alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack, is our bond sealed. From this day forward, you are mine to me and mine." Pack ties, mating ties, did not break the bond between Stefan and me, because they were two different magics, vampire and werewolf. But the spells I'd seen wrapping around Howell were similar to pack bonds. The first sign that what I'd done had worked was the now familiar burn in my chest as the pack absorbed another member. Howell staggered, and for a moment his weight pressed down on me unbearably. I think I blacked out, because my vision did that weird jump thing, where one moment I was staring at one thing, then the next I was looking at something different, though I couldn't remember moving my gaze. The Tibisena who was Howell was no longer standing over me, but fighting with the other Tibisena. I couldn't see Daryl, but Aurieli was lying with a knee bent in the wrong direction, and she wasn't moving.
"What did you do?"
Guayota's voice was oddly slurred, but I could hear the anger in it. I couldn't turn my head, but Guayota moved into my field of view. The huge, fiery dog form that Guayota wore was oddly lopsided. His left side looked exactly as I remembered, glowing red eye, crackled skin that showed the moving currents of molten substance that flowed just beneath. The other side was dark, the light beneath wholly extinguished, and as he staggered, half-dragging himself from the battleground to where I lay, the outer surface of the dead side began to lighten to gray and crumble when he moved.
"How did you steal?" said Guayota.
And then Adam was there, a great blue-silver wolf. Adam and Warren and Honey, who landed on Guayota at the same time, their fury as bright and shining as Guayota had ever been.
"Screw me and stake me out," Gary's voice was in my ear. "I think she's dead. How could she be burned this badly and not be dead?"
He was talking about me, I realized, but I didn't remember getting burned. Coyote had told me my neck was broken. Gary was still talking.
"I've sent back stakes that were this overdone. Mercy?"
There were other noises in the background, growls and howls and cries of pain. "Not dead yet," I told Gary. I had to say it again before he understood me. He huffed half a laugh.
"Finally found a sibling I could stand to talk to for more than 10 minutes, and..."
He didn't finish that sentence.
"I gotta tell you, you look bad, Mercy."
I licked my lips. They cracked, but I talked anyway. "Got here sooner than expected. You did, I mean. Did you get a call?" "Is Adam here? I'd be safe if Adam was really here." But that wasn't true, was it? Coyote had told me I was dying.
"No, but someone's phone was going off every 2 minutes until one of the werewolves killed it. Please save me from being trapped in a car with that many angry werewolves ever again. They were all mostly changed to wolf, barely, when I had another seeing, one of the big ones. Saw you and a couple of werewolves fighting Guayota on Honey's front lawn, and realized why I had to go with the wolves. Took me a while to get them to understand. And once they did, I had to drive because they were all too much werewolf already. And let me tell you, oncoming headlights when you have a migraine are no kind of fun."
A cry, the same kind of bone-chilling cry that Gary and I had heard once before, cut through the sounds of battle in Gary's soothing voice, like a knife. Gary turned to look, and that let me see one of the Tibisenas bite deep into the other and shake it until it turned into a much smaller thing. I recognized the mutated woman that the walking stick had once shown me. Hoel, the Tibisena who was Hoel, dropped her to the ground. She writhed once, then was still. "Look," Arielle said, and I was happy to know she wasn't dead. "Look at Guayota." I strained my eyes to the side until I could see the wolves fall away from the thing that had been Guayota. One of those wolves was Adam. Something inside me loosened. Adam was alive. Guayota's dog form dissolved around the man whom Christy had known as Juan Flores. Though there were wolves all around him, it was my eyes Guayota sought.
"I'm so hungry," he said. "Where is she? She was supposed to be here."
And then there was just nothing where he'd stood. Nothing. No wisp of clothing falling to the ground, no dust or ash. He was just gone. Adam turned to look at me, and I tried to get up, but the movement sent sparkles through my vision, and I was lost in darkness. The smell of cleaning solution woke me briefly.
"Broken neck, blah, blah, blah."
It sounded like Samuel, but there was something wrong with his voice. He sounded so sad, so I tried to listen. Maybe I could cheer him up.
"And the burns. I'm sorry, Adam."
Adam said something, and I sank into his voice like it was a warm sea.
"It's probably better if you talk to me and don't pay attention to all of that," said Coyote.
I was lying on a thick field of new-mown grass that smelled a lot better than the cleaning fluid had. I watched the sky where small groups of clouds chased each other like little ducks. "Hmm," I said dreamily. Coyote chuffed a laugh.
"They do have you on some strong stuff, but you'll remember this anyway. Guayota isn't dead. You can't kill one of his kind unless you destroy what he represents. That need not concern you, although I wouldn't be in a hurry to go visit the Canary Islands for a while.
A few years and he'll forget. He shouldn't have worn a human seeming for so long.
Like you did when you became Joe Old Coyote, I said.
Not at all, he told me indignantly. That cloud looks like me, don't you think?
The bigger one? I asked.
Yes, that one that looks like it's about to eat an egg.
No, that one's a rabbit.
Rabbit, he said indignantly. That's a coyote.
I laughed, but that was a mistake. My vision went black for a few minutes, then slowly the sky, clouds, and grass were back.
Don't do that, said Coyote. It makes it difficult to hold you here. I break things, a lot of things, but I don't want one of them to be you. So just rest here.
What about... It was difficult to be worried. Most of me wanted to just watch the clouds drift by.
Let me talk, Coyote said. You don't know what questions you want to ask. Unusual decision to bring Hoel into the pack. You could have used the walking stick to cut the threads of Guayota's spell, and that would have done the same thing as you managed to do with the pack spell.
He paused.
Maybe. Maybe it would have just burned to ashes. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the pack with a Tibisena in it.
I didn't have a choice, I told him. I gave the walking stick back to Beauclair.
Did you? Said Coyote. Anyway. Guayota, being separated from that which gave him life, the volcano, needed two anchors to hold him in his human seeming and allow him his power. Two anchors who were connected to his island. Why two? Why male and female? Who knows? Doubtless there is a reason, and if you meet him again, you might ask, because the answer interests me.
Never, I told him. I am never going to the Canary Islands. There was a little silence beside me, and I realized that he was lying in the grass, too.
"It's supposed to be beautiful in the Canaries," he said a little wistfully. "There's this underground lake lit by torches."
"No," I told him.
"Maybe Gary will go," Coyote said contemplatively. "But in any case, when you claimed Hoel, Tibisena, and all, it threw the magic that allowed Guayota to live away from his island out of balance, and it unraveled.
Then Hoel will go back to being just human? I asked.
That depends, Coyote said.
On what? I turned my head, glimpsed his face, then my world went black again.
Why don't you just die? Hissed someone in my ear.
After a moment, I realized it was Christy.
I know it was you. I know it. And now I look like a freak.
Something dripped on my cheek and touched my lips with salt.
Mom,
said Jessie. She sounded appalled and amused.
She's nasty and vindictive, Christy said. Everyone thinks she farts rainbows, and look what she did to me. I'm blue,
she wailed the last. Christy had used the bottle of shampoo she'd left in my bathroom. I hoped the dye hadn't stained the tile, but it would be worth it if it had. There were some noises, then Jessie's breath was warm on my ear.
She's gone to get coffee, Mercy, she told me.
I love her, but the dye was inspired, she giggled. You are terrifying. I can't believe you got her while you were...
She cleared her throat.
While you were in the hospital...
She laughed again.
I told her she should leave it. I'd dye my hair blue again and we could be twins. Even Aurelie laughed at her expression, though she turned her head so Mom couldn't see.
There was a long, peaceful silence, and then Jessie said,
I want so badly for her to be happy, but I can't make her happy. All I can do is love her. Do you think that's all right?
She patted the pillow beside my head.
You need to wake up pretty soon, though. Dad needs you. So do I.
The sheets were very white and scratchy, and the blankets too thin. My toes were cold, and I was lying on my side. I wiggled to try to pull my feet up and get them warm.
Mercy, Adam said.
We need to get new blankets, I told him, and he laughed.
Whatever you want, sweetheart.
I took a deep breath and realized that I really was awake because it hurt. The sun was shining. The AC was on too.